are listening to the Doug Hagmann Radio Show, weekdays 9 to 10 a.m. Eastern Time. And now the man behind the mic, a private investigator with over 30 years under his belt, Doug Hagmann.
Good morning, everyone. It's 6 a.m. on the West Coast of America, 9 a.m. here in the East. Welcome to Hagmann. It's the Doug Hagmann Investigative Hour for today. It is Wednesday, April 25th. 2018, day number 461 of the Donald Trump presidency, day number 343 of the runaway, absolutely obstructionist persecution special counsel. My goodness. Imagine being in that position as president of the United States. But anyway, let's walk together into a very deep rabbit hole. That is the tale of the Awan criminal cabal in the news. Well, there's recent news about this. A couple of things taking place. All right. Now, one of the, if you look on the web, if you look in the on the internet, one of the foremost reporters on this is Luke Rosiak from the Daily Caller. I mean, there are some other reporters out there on this, but this is not getting a lot of traction. Unfortunately, it's not. And even more so, it's misunderstood, it's downplayed, it's understated the importance of what we're seeing here. But thankfully, last week, the Democratic National Committee, they filed a lawsuit. And this is referenced by Donald Trump, President Trump. Let me take you, last week, it was April 20th. It was reported that the DNC, the Democratic National Committee's new lawsuit, could potentially be good news, President Trump declared Friday, referring to what could be an opening to the organization's server. Now, remember, the DNC's server was at the epicenter of numerous scandals, criminal activity alleged, and such. Now, the positive outlook came in response to the DNC suing the Trump campaign, Russia, and WikiLeaks earlier in the day. What is this? Say what? By the way, this is being reported, or this was reported on April 20th, 2018, by Mandy Mayfield of the Washington Examiner. But wait a second, okay. Hold on a second. Let me get this straight. The DNC is suing the Donald Trump campaign, Russia, and WikiLeaks. All right. I think I've got this. Just heard the campaign was sued, meaning I should point out, this is a tweet by Donald Trump, President Donald Trump. Just heard the campaign was sued by the obstructionist Democrats. This can be good news in that we will now counter for the DNC server that they refused to give to the FBI. The Debbie Wasserman Schultz servers and the documents held by the Pakistani mystery man in Clinton emails. Okay, that was a tweet from President Donald Trump, April 20th, 2018 at 7:19 p.m. What's this mean? Who's the Pakistani mystery man and Debbie Wasserman Schultz and Clinton emails? What's he talking about? In case you are just listening to or watching MSNBC or CNN, you wouldn't know, right? Because they don't talk about this. In the statement from DNC Chairman Tom Perez, he said that the president colluded with, quote, well, a, quote, hostile foreign power to better his chances of winning the contest. Man, they just can't accept defeat, can they? During the 2016 presidential campaign, Russia launched an all-out assault on our democracy, and it found a willing, active partner in Donald Trump's campaign, Perez said in a statement, according to the Washington Post. What is this guy on for, crying out loud? Okay, but you know what? I'm not going to hyperventilate here. Let's get into this, and let's dig through this and understand what we're dealing with, because this is big news. This is big news. But let's understand the players here first. All right. The first player is Thomas Edward Perez. He's the head of the Democratic National Committee. He's 56 years old, born October 7th, 1961, born in Buffalo, New York, the son of immigrants from the Dominican Republic. He earned a degree in international relations, political science from Brown University in 83, a Juris Doctorate from Harvard Law School in 87, Master of Public Policy from the JFK School of Government also in 87. And so from 87 to 89, Perez was a law clerk for a judge in Colorado in the early 90s. He served as a prosecutor, later as deputy chief in the Civil Rights Division of Bill Clinton's Department of Justice. And then from 1995 to 98, Perez worked as special counsel to the illustrious Senator Teddy Kennedy. In 96, Perez was instrumental in facilitating the passage of the Church Arson Prevention Act, a bill founded, folks, man, the Church Arson Prevention Act. This was a bill founded on the false, fake premise that black churches were being targeted at a disproportionately high rate by arsonists. If you have time one day, just look into the Church Arson Prevention Act and what was behind it. Anyway, from 98 to 99, Perez went back to the Department of Justice Civil Rights Division as Deputy Assistant Attorney General. Now, in that position, he helped establish the Worker Exploitation Task Force. What's that? Well, they sought to improve the working conditions of illegal aliens. Okay. There are a few things wrong with that, I think, but whatever. I certainly wouldn't want to see anyone locked in the sweatshop, okay? I get that, but really? Wait a second. What's wrong with... Okay, I'm not going to go there. Oh, my goodness. Anyway, during his tenure with the Department of Justice under Clinton, Perez volunteered for and later became a board member and president of Casa de Maryland, a George Soros-funded advocacy group for illegal aliens. George Soros, man, I am getting so tired of hearing that guy's name. From 99 until the end of the Clinton administration, he served as director of the Office of Civil Rights at the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. All right, so that's kind of his background, I suppose. But there's so much more. There's just so much more. Where do you start and where do you stop? By the way, in 2007, Perez ran for the office of Maryland AG. He lost. But in 2008, I guess we'll jump to 2008, Perez worked on Obama's presidential campaign and then served on the transition team after Obama's victory. It was on March 31st of 2009 when President Obama nominated, when Obama nominated Perez to be Assistant Attorney General for the Department of Justice Civil Rights Division. The U.S. Senate confirmed Perez in October of 2009. Now, his mission at the Department of Justice, his stated mission, he said that the Civil Rights Division was to help those Americans who were living in the shadows. Now, what does that mean? We're not talking about Americans. We're talking about illegal aliens. And throw in there the Muslims allegedly subjected to post 9/11 backlash. Okay, think about this for a second. Oh, and as well, LGBT brothers and sisters forced to confront discrimination. Okay, so this guy is fighting for the illegal aliens in this country. People in this country illegally, he's fighting for their rights as Americans. He's fighting for LGBT rights, special rights, not rights, but special rights. And he's standing with Muslims in this massive persecution of Muslims after 9/11 that we all saw, didn't we? Oh, we didn't? Oh, that's right. There wasn't really any. All right. So right from the beginning, Perez. This is important. We got to know these players. Thomas Perez. And you're not going to hear this anywhere else. Well, you might. I don't know. But right from the beginning, Perez, as he worked with Obama, he pledged to greatly expand the Department of Justice's prosecution of hate crimes. And he described these hate crimes as predominantly white on black. He made it clear that he viewed disparate impact, that is, instances where particular employment, education-related policies and whatever, the policies affect whites and non-whites in different ways. And he said, this is prima facie proof of discrimination, basically. This is proof. An example would be when a company makes a hiring promotion decision based on exam scores, and whites as a group score higher than non-whites. Oh, the humanity. Wait a minute. Did I just have a minor stroke here? Wait a second. Instances where particular employment or education-related policies affect whites and non-whites in different ways. That's prima facie proof of discrimination. For example, when a company makes its hiring or promotion decisions based on exam scores. You stop right there. Person A scores higher than person B. Person A gets promoted. Good for me. Works for me, right? Well, wait a second. Unless person A is white. Then that is proof. That's prima facie proof of discrimination. This according to Tom Perez. Now, I'm dumbing that down a little bit, but ultimately that's what it is. And now, under Obama, April 23rd, 2012, almost to the day, 6 years ago, Perez's Department of Justice sued the city of Jacksonville, Florida, claiming that its use of written tests to determine promotions in its fire department had resulted in this disparate impact upon black candidates. You got to be kidding me. In my view, folks, Perez insulted every African American, every black listening to this program. Perez just gave you a huge insult, insulted you bigly. Come on, man. It's crazy. And I could go on, but you get the idea who Perez is. In 2010, the Civil Rights Division led a fight against an Arizona law deputizing state police to check the immigration status of any criminal suspects who they believed to be in the United States illegally. You can't do that. You can't ask those questions. You see what this guy's all about. Now, he's head of the DNC. A good place for him to be, right? Again, I could go on. There's historical... The history of this guy, it goes on and on and on and on and on and on. It was in March 18, 2013, Obama nominated Perez to be the U.S. Secretary of Labor, replacing Secretary Hilda Solis. Now, he's got some email problems too. Because in May 2013, in a hearing before the members of the House Oversight and Judiciary Committee, Perez testified that he could not recall ever having used his personal Verizon email account to conduct Justice Department business. Again, another email conspiracy or another email scandal. Personal email scandal. By the way, Perez, under his direction, the Department of Justice slow-walked efforts intended to help ensure that overseas military personnel could exercise their voting rights. Why did he do that? Because the overseas military personnel tend to support conservative candidates by a wide margin. You talk about vote fixing or whatever you want to call that, election tampering. This guy has got cojones, doesn't he? To file a lawsuit about election tampering, and then you see this, where he slow walked efforts intended to help our military personnel working overseas, because they tended to vote Republican or conservative. Man. Oh, and meanwhile, under Perez, his division strove without jurisdiction to help felons regain voting privileges in a number of states because they overwhelmingly vote for Democrats. You get where we're coming from here, right? Just to be clear, he's, again, the head of the DNC, the plaintiff in this lawsuit. And I will tell you this, you will be surprised when you start looking at lawsuits, of which I am intimately familiar, when you start looking at the background and look into the plaintiffs, who they really are, oh, goodness gracious. You're in for some surprises because, period, you're in for some surprises. All right. It was on February 25th, 2017, Perez did defeat Keith Ellison, the Marxist Muslim in Congress, by a margin of 235 votes to 200 for the chair position of the DNC. They voted twice, by the way. Perez's victory came in the second round of voting. He had fallen one vote short of winning in the first round. I don't know. Seriously, I don't know. What was that, a do-over? I can't. All right. So there you have Perez. That's kind of a mini bio of Tom Perez, the head of the DNC, the plaintiff in this lawsuit against the Donald Trump campaign, the entirety of Russia, the entire country of Russia, as well as WikiLeaks. There you have it. That's Tom Perez. Now, back to the story. April 20th, 2018, last week, as reported by Mandy Mayfield and others, DNC, the plaintiff, represented by Tom Perez, said, okay, we're suing Donald Trump, Russia, and WikiLeaks. Just so we're clear on that, Donald Trump responds, okay, it's good news because we will now counter for the DNC server that they refused to give to the FBI, the Debbie Wasserman Schultz servers, and the documents held by the Pakistani mystery man and Clinton emails. Oh, what is meant by that? Well, let's take a look because this is going to be good. This reference to this Pakistani mystery man is a reference to Imran Awan. The former staffer Imran Awan and his wife were charged with conspiracy to commit bank fraud, making false statements on a loan or credit application, and engaging in unlawful money transactions. Now you could stop right there and say, "Huh, two people from Pakistan." They were IT staffers working for Congress, charged with conspiracy to commit bank fraud, making false statements on a loan or credit application. You could stop right there and say, huh, that's terrible. It is so much more than that. It is not just Imran Awan and his wife. It is not just one or two or small or limited to just bank fraud, conspiracy to commit bank fraud, making false statements on it. It's not about the loan applications at all. It's about so much more. And you know this, at least you know most of it, I think. But we have to get into this because this is the Marxist Muslim infiltration into Congress, one of the biggest stories that is being spiked by the media that no one is hearing about. And this thanks to Obama, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, Hillary Clinton, all of the regulars. You've got to understand where we're at with this. It's huge. And it's not a conspiracy theory. It is fact. What is going on, what has gone on inside the halls of Congress with respect to the IT, the technical, the internet work, the email work, the server work, is criminal in my view. And at the epicenter, you've got Muslims at the epicenter of this. Marxist Muslims being protected by members of the Congress, specifically Debbie Wasserman Schultz. And so many other stories surrounding this. Again, Luke Rosiak gets into this, reports very, very thoroughly on this. But there is so much to this. So we're going to get into it right now. Just so everyone understands how big this is. Just so we're clear, we're not talking about merely Imran Awan and his wife, both arrested, by the way. Imran Awan and Hina Alvi, his wife. We're not talking about just those two. We're talking about Imran Awan, his brother Abid Awan, that's A-B-I-D Awan, Jamal Awan, Omar Awan, and then wives Hina Alvi and Natalia Sova. We're also talking about a guy by the name of Dr. Ali Al-Attar and others. So it's not just one or two people. It's a group of, in my view, criminal Marxist Muslims infiltrating the most sensitive of all departments inside the halls of Congress. The Awan cabal, in my view, this criminal cabal had complete, based on information, and information is a consequence of my investigation as well, they have had complete and direct access to information not only of a number of Democratic congressmen and women, but direct access to information of three extremely sensitive committees. You have the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence, the Homeland Security Committee, and the House Foreign Affairs Committee. The access to the information they had, along with their known or suspected affiliations to such groups as Hezbollah and the Muslim Brotherhood, has shaken government insiders with knowledge about this case, according to my sources in Washington, my investigations. Imran Awan was first hired by Representative Robert Wexler of Florida as IT director back in 2004. Following that, Imran Awan was rehired by Debbie Wasserman Schultz in 2005, 13 years ago. Their access to sensitive and classified information was abruptly ended on February 2nd of 2017, just last year, 12 years of access, when the Capitol Police, among other agencies, were looking into bank fraud and some other suspicious activity. I'll get to that in a moment. But when you look at Imran Awan and others, this story is so big here. I've got to kind of basically break it down here. And you have to ask yourself this. Why isn't the media interested in this? The Awan brothers, the three IT. Now, the Awan brothers, we're talking about three IT specialists in quotation marks, air quotes. They were fired for rooting through the House Democrats' sensitive files, among other things. Three brothers in this case, the core group of this group, they manage the Office of Information Technology for members of the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence, as I said, and other congressmen and women. They were relieved of their duties on suspicion that they accessed congressional computers without permission. This back on February 2nd of 2017. The three core people, the brothers Abid, Imran, and Jamal, were barred from computer networks at the House of Representatives on February 2nd, 2017, as I mentioned. Three members of the intelligence panel and five members of the House Committee on Foreign Affairs were among dozens of members who employed the suspects on a shared basis. The two committees that I just mentioned there deal with many of the nation's most sensitive issues, and documents included those related to Muslim or Islamic terror. Now, Debbie Wasserman Schultz sits at the epicenter of this. She's the Florida Democrat who was previously the target of a disastrous email hack. Remember that? when she served as the chairman of the DNC during the 2016 campaign. This is what President Donald Trump is talking about. By the way, the Awans, they hail from Pakistan. You know, their client list of Democrats, some 50 or so, over the years, 80. Actually, it's closer to 80. And they, all three of them, the brothers and their co-conspirators, as I will call them, they've been employed by the Democrats. Especially Speer, Jackie Speer, Andre Carson, Castro. By the way, Castro, he sits on the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence. He utilized the services of Jamal Awan. Speer and Carson's office utilized Imran Awan. Abid Awan was employed by Lois Frankel and Ted Lieu, members of the House Committee on Foreign Affairs as well. Also in the committee is Castro. Robin Kelly, whose office employed Jamal Awan. Ted Lieu sits on the Subcommittee on National Security and Information Technology of the Committee on Oversight and Government Reform. Access to all of this information. Pakistani nationals. Now, I know this is a little bit out of sequence, but I want you to think back to January of 2017, right after President Donald Trump got into office. Now, this is critically important because it's hardly ever mentioned, if at all. Think back to January of 2017. Think back to the Awan criminal cabal having access to the most sensitive of information in Congress. Here comes President Donald Trump in office. You had Debbie Wasserman Schultz giving the Awan cabal an IT contract, having access to all of these sensitive committees, the Democrats employing them were read into the Middle East military actions. You have to know this. Do you recall the first military action, the ill-fated raid in Yemen in which Navy SEAL Ryan Owens was killed in January of 2017? And the statement said by the Navy SEALs, it was as if they knew we were coming, in reference to the target. It would appear, based on my investigation, based on the people I've talked to, that there was information exchange between the Awans in that cabal of criminality, and given to the terrorists in Yemen that resulted in the death of a Navy SEAL. And I find it not so coincidental that raid was in January. On February 2nd, all access was cut off, yet nothing was mentioned about this. This, you could look at these circumstances from start to finish and see that this is a crime that would make Watergate look like nothing. But why on earth would not the Washington Times or New York Times or Washington Post, I should say, why wouldn't they report on something like this? Why aren't we hearing this about this from MSNBC or CNN? Obviously, you know the answer to that question, so I probably didn't even need to ask that. But again, it's much bigger than even that. Now, two things before I go further. I probably should expand on the raid in Yemen. You can find information on this. Just type in raid on Yakla. That's Y-A-K-L-A. It was the 2017 Yemen raid, the first military operation carried out under the instruction of President Donald Trump. This was an intelligence gathering operation, and it was compromised from within, or so it appears. What you might read, for example, on Wikipedia or other, the New York Times or whatever. It does not have the full information, but this did cost the life of a Navy SEAL, and the one American commando from DEVGRU, the SEAL Team 6, Chief Petty Officer William Owens, was killed. Three additional DEVGRU operators were wounded, but the intent here was to gather information and also strike at the epicenter of Al-Qaeda in Yemen, all right? Now, by the way, we lost as well a Bell Boeing Osprey, which was destroyed during the operation. It was a very costly operation in the end, and this raised questions about Donald Trump's his competence, and that exactly as it was designed to do. But information perhaps leaked from the Awans through this congressional network of spies of these Muslims, providing advance notice to those on the ground in Yemen, could have played a factor, at least in my view, based on my findings. So I want to clear that up. And one more thing before I go forward. To be fair, the situation with the Awans, it was July of 2017 that retired U.S. Army Reserve Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer joined Laura Ingraham on Tucker Carlson Tonight to discuss this very issue, meaning the larger Debbie Wasserman Schultz / Awan Brothers scandal or crime. So I'm going to play a clip from that July 27th. I think it was July 27th. Perhaps it was. It was in late July. I'm going to play a clip from that. It's 2 minutes in length. Take a listen to this, and we'll move on from there. Here it is.
Conspiracy theories.
This is more like a Quentin Tarantino movie with everything except the GIMP, and I think the GIMP's still going to show up.
Oh, good. I hated the GIMP in that movie.
Look, this is complex, and let me try to simplify it. Basically, Debbie Wasserman Schultz has employed three brothers who were of Pakistani origin at three times the salary of everybody else who does IT on Capitol Hill. Mm. And this all started years ago.
They must be really good at their job.
Well, apparently they failed at working at Best Buy and other places. So I guess if you fail at Best Buy, you get to be hired by the Hill.
Were they at Best Buy?
I can't remember which one. It was one of those outlets. Now, what happened, though, is that she's employed these folks. And over the past years, there's been real issues regarding the fact that every other Democrat person they work for on the Hill fired them. But they were retained by her. Now, what is really key here to remember, Laura, it's not about hard drives. It's about the fact that these individuals, during the time they worked for her on Capitol Hill in her position there as a member of Congress,
three brothers, Pakistani origin, which is not in and of itself a bad thing at all.
Had massive access to all sorts of databases, to include email of other members of Congress, super user access to the system itself, and most importantly, the sensitive information being held by the House Foreign Affairs Committee and other committees that they had access to. What this all comes down to is like, okay, you could have all that, but what gets worse is she actually employs these folks apparently to do hideous things behind the scenes. There's evidence now that at least one of these brothers was helping her do the Bernie Sanders malevolent activities of trying to manipulate things against him. Mm-hmm. They actually helped her do things like voice change calls. They actually did all these other things, Then there's evidence now that all this information they had access to dumped off into a third database, which is now being called a breach. So that's why the Capitol Hill police rolled in saying there's something wrong here. And now the FBI has rolled in. And let me give you the big takeaway here. It looks like a foreign intelligence service may be the recipient of all this, and something called the Muslim Brotherhood.
So, the Muslim Brotherhood?
The Muslim
and
Brotherhood.
Debbie, they're going to really say it's conspiracy theory
really
now.
Really a conspiracy now, but that's where apparently all this has been going. And law enforcement, that's why the FBI is now investigating beyond the waterfall.
Well, these brothers have been kicking around Capitol Hill in various capacities for IT.
Right.
But they essentially were blacklisted by most of the other Democrats, correct?
Right.
But yet she gave them a home.
She gave them a home.
Very interesting.
And they actually suspended most of their access in February of this year, and she kept them on anyway. So
she's just very very nice person.
Apparently.
It's a jobs program
over
there at the DNC.
I guess that $300,000 being kicked over to Pakistan finally was the straw that broke the camel's back.
But his wife is gone. She's safely over there in Pakistan. Keep covering it for us. Lieutenant Colonel Schaefer, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay. That was the clip. It was from July 27th of 2017, Lieutenant Colonel retired Tony Schaefer speaking to Laura Ingraham. Now, here's, again, much bigger than even that, but you get a taste of how big this is from that. So don't take my word for it. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, fully involved in this, fully aware of what's going on. The reference to that McDonald's, or the Best Buy, I should say, Best Buy issue, I believe was a reference to Rao Abbas. That's R-A-O, that's the first name, Abbas, A-B-B-A-S, the last name, Rao Abbas, Imran Awan's best friend. Back in 2007, he joined the payroll. He joined the Awans. At that time, in 2007, Imran Awan was working as an IT in IT services on Capitol Hill. He was joined by Hina Alvi, his wife, Imran Awan's wife. And then later that year in 2007, his best friend, Rao Abbas, joined the payroll as well. Now, Rao Abbas had previously lost his job at McDonald's. Now, it's important to note that IT services on the Hill are a cost center, meaning that each elected official can decide who he or she employs for IT services, and the IT professional bills the elected official, their office, for the services. Okay, so you have Imran Awan, Hina Alvi, and then bam, Rao Abbas. 2 years before that, I should point out that Abid Awan, Imran Awan's brother, began working at Capitol Hill, on Capitol Hill as well. At multiple times, the salary, the normal salary, you're talking $100,000 plus per person, totaling over $5 million to this criminal cabal in payments, in payroll payments over the course of a dozen years, roughly, which allowed Hina Alvi back in 2008 to purchase a home for $470,000 in Lorton, Virginia. But that wasn't enough. She purchased a second home in Lorton, Virginia, that same year. And Imran Awan puts a home he owns in Springfield, Virginia, in his father's name. There were some weird things going on there at the same time of the mortgage crisis back in 2008 when the stock market crashed and stuff. But so they were taking advantage, based on everything that I've been able to see, of the mortgage crisis, and as well as their newfound wealth from their jobs on Capitol Hill. By the way, in response to the mortgage crisis of 08, Congress did pass the Housing and Economic Recovery Act that provided, about $187 billion-plus in government loans for Fannie and Freddie programs, and places them in receivership under the newly established Federal Housing Finance Agency. That's important because it's going to come up later. And, of course, November of 08, you got Barack Hussein Obama taking the Oval Office. In 09, January 2009, Obama sworn in. And, of course, he quickly appoints Clinton as Secretary of State in charge of what? Foreign affairs, of course. Foreign affairs. You see a pattern developing here. Other individuals associated with the Awans include Dr. Ali Al-Attar. It was in 2009, this Dr. Ali Al-Attar, his offices were raided by the FBI. Why? Defrauding Medicare, Medicaid, and insurance companies for billing non-existent medical procedures. Now, why is that important? Just go back to, You got to go back to late 2002 and early 2003. You had, at that time, Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul Wolfowitz meeting on a regular basis, secretly, with a group of Iraqi expatriates who were headed by none other than Dr. Ali al-Attar. Okay. Just keep that in the back of your mind. And by the way, in 2003, al-Attar had given an interview to the New York Times because he was that special. He was one of four people chosen to reestablish the Iraq Ministry of Health, and that he expected to be called to Baghdad the following week after his interview. As a matter of fact, Dr. Ali al-Attar was advising President, at that time, George W. Bush, key Iraq policy advisors, that the U.S. forces invading Iraq would be greeted as liberators. This is how incestuous and how deep this goes. Don't think that this is just one simple mortgage bank fraud deal. This is something much bigger than you've been led to believe. So you have that. Then you, again, fast forward to 2009. The FBI raids the offices of al-Attar for defrauding Medicare, Medicaid, insurance companies, billing for non-existent medical procedures. Let's toss in another suspect, Dr. Abdul Fadul. It's almost fun to say, right? The FBI searched Dr. Abdul Fadul, his offices, after he was suspected of submitting false claims to insurance companies using the names of Egyptian embassy employees. Now, the federal investigators seized bank statements and computers and patient files, but no criminal charges were ever brought against Fadul or his partner. Wait for it. That's right, his partner, Dr. Ali al-Attar, who is not, by the way, named in the civil suit. Now, by this time, the Awans have gotten comfortable. They're working. They're getting loads, boatloads of money for their services, which really they only kind of showed up on a part-time, once-in-a-while basis, while meanwhile establishing off-premises servers where information directly from these congressional committees was being funneled to off-premise servers. Understand that these individuals, Pakistani nationals, had access to all of the documents, all of the emails of all of the congressional congresspeople that they were working for. So, they were able to take loans as employees from the Congressional Credit Union. Oh, but in 2009, I should add that the Congressional Credit Union repossessed a car owned by Abid Awan. Why is that important? Well, because there are money issues. You're going to see this as this develops. Just hang with me here. It was in November of 2009, the Awan family began managing a full-time car dealership in Virginia, with Abid Awan running day-to-day operations after contributing some $250,000. That's $250,000 in startup cash. You know what it was called. Cars International A, LLC. Think about that. CIA, as it was referred to in various court documents. Now, it was in late 2010 when a guy by the name of Nasir Khattak, K-H-A-T-T-A-K, a one-time business partner of Amir Awan, states by late 2010, Imran was running the business in full control and instructed Abid not to speak to anyone. We're talking about Cars International A, or CIA, which Cars International A, run by Abid Awan, ultimately filed for bankruptcy in September of 2010. Abid Awan has more than $1 million in debts. What's going on here? Business associates stated in court documents that Abid had stolen money and vehicles from them. Now, you've got to really think about what's going on here. A car dealership, stolen vehicles, money missing. Think in terms of terrorism and terrorists and people coming to the country, we'll say needing transportation, needing money, needing things. Okay. But aside from that, back to Dr. Ali Al-Attar. He was charged by the Maryland State Board of Physicians for unprofessional conduct in practice of medicine, failure to cooperate in lawful investigation. And ultimately, in 2011, the Department of Health and Human Services sued Dr. Ali Al-Attar's business partner. Also in 2011, Natalia Sova, a woman from the Ukraine. Where have we heard about the Ukraine before? Think Russia collusion against accusations against President Trump. This is, in part, this is why he's pretty excited about this. Natalia Sova, from the Ukraine, who was Abid Awan's wife, is thrust into the position as the IT tech for Ted Deutch. Soon after, he employs Imran Awan and Ra'u Abbas, as well. Deutch also employs a full-time IT worker based out of his district office, and that's rare. So why have the Awans? Meanwhile, in 2012, a second mortgage is taken out on the $470,000 property purchased by Hina Alvi. Now, I know I'm throwing a lot of information out at you here, but all of this is critical because it's painting this picture. All of these pieces, this mosaic, is painting a picture here. Abid Awan in 2012 declared bankruptcy. He manages to keep ownership of two houses while telling the bankruptcy court and creditors that he's got no assets with which to pay him. He signs a sworn statement that he and his wife, Natalia Sova, are living apart and need separate residence. Debts to creditors go unpaid to the tune of $1 million in liabilities. Talk about bankruptcy fraud, right? In my view. Abid Awan is then observed in Beirut, Lebanon, conversing with who? Dr. Ali Al-Attar, this Iraqi political figure who's wanted by now by U.S. authorities and has been linked to Hezbollah. And who's Hezbollah? The Iranian-backed Middle Eastern terrorist outfit, right? Abid Awan received a loan from Al-Attar, listen to this, in the amount of $100,000, which reportedly was to operate Cars International A. Remember Nasir Kotek? Well, later in sworn testimony, Nasir Kotek, who operated an established car dealership next door to Cars International A, testified that Abid Awan's dealership financial books were a sham. Ultimately, Al-Attar's medical license was revoked, and he's charged with a separate tax fraud charges and such. After the IRS and FBI finds that he used multiple bank accounts to hide income, he fled to Iraq to avoid prison here in the United States, all under the watchful eye of Barack Obama's Department of Justice and the FBI. Can we say Mueller? Comey? It spans that length of time. Oh, and then we have Haseeb Rana, a high school friend of Imran Awan, being hired as an IT worker for the House as well. Let's toss in another Awan, the youngest, Jamal. In 2014, he joined the IT workers. How old was he in 2014? 20 years old. The youngest, Jamal, 20 years old. He just managed to get $160,000 salary at 20 years old. Man, you cannot make this stuff up, but it gets worse because in 2014, you've got Seth Rich, who began working for the DNC as the voter expansion data director, which puts him directly right in the center of all of the IT stuff. One of his tasks at the DNC is the development of a computer application to help voters locate polling stations. Okay, think about this now. Seth Rich, 2014, now puts him in the path of the Awans. Okay, you have, during this time, you've got the Awans and the people surrounding them being picked up and released and picked up and released by members of Congress consistently. Now, it was February of 2016 when the chief of staff for Representative Yvette Clark of New York signs a form removing $120,000 worth of missing IT equipment from a house-wide tracking system after one of the Awan brothers alerts the office the equipment was gone. $120,000. That's one-tenth of the annual IT budget. Now, think about that. But it's no big deal, right? It was around this time when it became known that the Awans had full access, full control over Debbie Wasserman Schultz's usernames and passwords and devices. And this was brought out, this was made known publicly back in mid-2016. It was July 10th of 2016 as well when Seth Rich is murdered. Seth Rich's mother told NBC's Washington affiliate WRC-TV, there had been a struggle. His hands were bruised, his knees were bruised, his face is bruised, yet he had two shots to his back, and yet they never took anything. They didn't finish robbing him, they just took his life. Consider Seth Rich and the Awans. Consider that little nugget of information I just said. By the way, let me interject something here. You know, I've talked about lawsuits, correct? All the time. It's interesting because the blowback, when you talk about Seth Rich and you talk about Seth Rich in terms of this particular, the Awan issue and the transfer of data from the DNC computers, the amount of pushback in the lawsuits saying this is all fake news, it increases by orders of magnitude. So we're over the target. It was July 26th of 2016. Remember this when WikiLeaks published 44,053 emails and 17,761 attachments from the top U.S. Democratic National, from the top of the U.S. Democratic National Committee. It was just right after that when Debbie Wasserman Schultz resigned as DNC chief in the wake of the compromised IT system. And who is the BFF of Debbie Wasserman Schultz in this respect? It's Imran Awan. It's not by coincidence, August 9th, 2016, Julian Assange is interviewed, and he mentions Seth Rich, but doesn't really go as far by saying Seth Rich is the source of the WikiLeaks documents from the DNC. But why would he mention Seth Rich in that context? Again, it gets worse. It gets bigger. I only have a few minutes left here. This goes right through today. Understand, of course, November 8th, 2016 was the day that Donald Trump became the president of the United States of America. It was on that day when everything changed. The Hillary Clinton camp, the people, the Clintons, the DNC in particular, the DNC in particular, in full panic mode. Why? Simply because they lost? No. Because of the discovery of this spy network. Because remember, it was on February 2nd of 2017 when the Awans were locked out of Congress, and all the people associated with Iwan's locked out of Congress, no longer having access to the information, except for Debbie Wasserman Schultz, who kept Imran Iwan on the payroll as a consultant subsequent to that, inexplicably, or at least to the uninformed, inexplicably. So as I wrap up today's program, we go back to the recent lawsuit by Thomas Perez, head of the DNC. I told you all about Perez, all what he was about, and this lawsuit against Donald Trump and against Russia and against WikiLeaks. Why is Donald Trump clapping, jumping up and down, and tweeting out, "It's a good day"? Because there is something called discovery. And in the process of discovery, Mr. Perez, methinks thou protest too much, doth protest too much. This will be a conflagration with respect to discovery. This is the first installment with respect to the Iwan criminal cabal. Just laid the foundation for you. I want to thank those people at Reddit, those people out there, citizen journalists, Luke Rosiak, Daily Caller, others who really have gotten into this and really done a fantastic job of exposing the criminality, the treacherous, the spying that has taken place. To the detriment of the United States. We're talking about treason. We're talking about sedition. We're talking about espionage. It's more than bank fraud. It's more than a loan. It's more than loans. It's more than what you're being told. This, in and of itself, is a huge spy ring, in my view, that was facilitated by Debbie Wasserman Schultz and the DNC. Smack dab in the middle of this, Seth Rich, the WikiLeaks, the disclosure of the WikiLeaks documents, as I mentioned, and you've got a group of Pakistani nationals at the heart, in the halls of our Congress. Oh, and let's not forget the Yakla raid that took the life of a Navy SEAL. Donald Trump's first military action. The Navy SEALs said it was as if they knew we were coming. This is what is going on that's not being reported. And this is the first installment about the criminality. This is, again, the espionage. The facilitators therein. Remember, you've got Andre Carson. You've got Keith Ellison. They're Muslims in Congress. Laura Ingraham, Pakistani nationals. Not that there's anything wrong with that. That reminds me of the Seinfeld episode. Not that there's anything wrong with that, right? Oh, but there is, and there is so much more. What do you think? Do you think there's more? There is. If you like what you heard, folks, tell others about the Doug Hagmann Radio Show. Post this on social networking. Just spread all of this around. I will be digging and providing you with, I'll be providing you with a whole lot more information in the next installment of the Doug Hagmann Radio Show. This has got to be made known, the level of espionage, of treason, treachery, sedition, not just by the Pakistani nationals and their co-conspirators, but also by members of Congress, not just against Donald Trump, but against the American people. And against the nation, against the United States of America. This is huge, so tell others, please. And subscribe to this show, Blog Talk Radio. Just go to my BTR page. Listen on Global Star Satellite Radio or BTR, but subscribe to BTR, the Doug Hagmann Radio Show. More coming tomorrow. Folks, tell everyone you know, Doug Hagmann Radio Show. God bless. Stay safe until the flagship show tonight, which, by the way, is going to be audio only until we get the issues worked out. Goodbye.
The Doug Hagmann Radio Show is brought to you by The Hagmann Report. Tune in to The Hagmann Report weekdays, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. For more information, go to HagmannReport.com. That's HagmannReport.com.